My name's Darren. I'm an alcoholic.
Darren.
And that's a first, you know. I realized I was sitting there and I was like, I gotta go pee, man. I didn't want to come up here and be holding it the whole time. So it's like, glad I took care of that.
But,
so, anyways, it's good to be here. It's good to be in a meeting. And it's always good to be in a meeting for me. You know, I did pray before I came up, before I got here today, tonight. And my hopes are that, and I asked it in prayer, that I might be able to say something that will help somebody to stick it out for another day, you know. So I don't know, they say to share your experience, strength, and hope, or what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so I'm just going to just tell you a little bit about my upbringing. It was good, you know. My sister and I are both adopted. I was brought up in a good household. My dad was a master union plumber, and my mom babysat about 25 kids at our house. And I was a good kid. I was brought up with discipline and good values, morals, and ideals. And went to church until I was about 11 and a half religiously. My summers, about 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks out of the summer, was spent in vacation Bible school. And so I did all that stuff. And you're a kid, you're confused a little bit, but I knew who Jesus was. You know, I saw the cross and didn't have much of a whole lot of understanding, but I was just trying to do the right things. And I remember hearing, you know, turn the other cheek, you know, and to be nice and kind and all that stuff. And going through school, there was one thing that got under my skin, and I was bullied because I wouldn't fight back. I wouldn't fight. You know, kids, punks, would get a hold of me, get me in headlocks and start beating on me and wailing on me, and I wouldn't fight back. I'd protect myself, but it just fueled me. But I never did anything. And I finally went to my mom. I was around fourth grade, and I told her, I got to learn how to fight. I got to do something, you know. So bottom line is I learned a little bit, and she put me in private lessons for about a year. And it got me enough confidence to be able to protect myself to a certain degree anyway. And I got some confidence, and kids started leaving me alone once they tried a few times to screw with me. So to this day, I still have an issue with bullies. So that was the only real problems I had, you know. I didn't really have any other real problems. So I'm very blessed to not have had a story where it involved any kind of, you know, being molested stuff and all that kind of crap. I was overall brought up very well. And I was got very, very involved with sports. Started getting into sports in leagues and all that at about 9 years old. And I did pretty well in the sports that I played. And never in my life would I have thought, you know, because I was always taught drugs, you know, no drugs. No. And certainly alcohol, but my dad was an alcoholic, and so I saw drinking around all the time. And I remember the first time I drank, mom and dad, my dad had converted a 2.5-car garage into a big playroom, and we had a massive backyard in this tract we lived in. And so he made this massive sand lot, and there was monkey bars and swings and forts and all kinds of stuff out there, all made out of pipe because he was a plumber. So it was really cool. And so we had the setup for kids outside and inside. And every year, my dad would have my cousins, who I really looked up to and I admired, and a few of my aunts, uncles, and over for New Year's Eve. And what he would do is my dad made his own roulette table and craps table and all that stuff. And the thing I remember when I was a kid, and I don't know where I was lacking any kind of real happiness or laughter or whatever, but they would be light, they would be there in their drinking. And I saw this for years going on, that they would be, you know, just having a blast, laughing and, you know, all the stuff in their drinking. So I think I associated drinking with having a good freaking time, you know, before I even drank. And I wanted that, you know, I wanted that. So when I was 11 and a half years old, I talked a couple of my cousins into, get me a drink, you know, get me a drink. So I drank that night. I didn't get drunk. I didn't drink a lot, but I drank what I was hoping would get me a little buzzy or something, you know, something that they got, you know. And but I didn't. And but the year after that, I did. And so, and from there, it was whenever I had the opportunity. In spite of how athletic I was and all that stuff, when the opportunity presented itself, I drank. And then it eventually rolled into other things. But nonetheless, at about 12 and a half years old, I couldn't wait until the next New Year's. The next New Year's, man, come on. Long year waiting. But I got to drink during that night. By the time I was, I was 17 years old. Was I 17? I was about 17. I ended up dropping out of school right after water polo in my 11th grade and just dropped out of school. And I had a then a girlfriend who ended up getting pregnant roughly May of that year, which was my 17-year birthday time. So from that point on, I knew school was out of the question and I needed to take on responsibility and I needed to see what the hell I can do. And so I ended up lying. My year that I was born is 62, and I would when I was filling out applications, I was making it because before you couldn't get a full time job, which was 40 hours back in the day, a 40 hour job full time, without being 18 years old, and I was only 17. So I was taking that two and kind of so if they ever called me on it, I could say no, that was a two. So I'd make it look like a zero, but kind of cross it a little bit. And say, no, that was supposed to be a two. So, and if they interviewed me and they asked if I was 18 or if I even got brought up, I would say, yeah, you know, I was 18. That way I could get full-time employment. It was always minimum wage stuff, but it was something until I got into the Army. I got on a delayed entry program. You know, once I took on that full-time work, I was into older people. And a lot of the time, they were the 21 years or older, you know. And so a lot of time after work, it was like, hey, you want to go get a 12-pack or get whatever, you know. And we're going to get together, a group of us getting together over at somebody so-and-so's house. So, yeah, you know. So here I had, by this time I was married at 17 years old with a pregnant girl, well, pregnant wife. And I'm going out pretty much every night with these coworkers and getting plastered. Coming home very late, and it was on from that point. And then when I got in the Army, man, talking about getting on, here I am 17 and a half years old, I'm in the Army, and I went through basic training at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and the legal drinking age there was 18 years old. So on base, you could drink even if you were under 18, you could have beer and wine up until you're 18. Whatever state you were in, you would go by their laws as far as hard liquor. But if we just go off base for our passes and stuff, and that was oblivious. And so there, my real drinking already began before I went in the Army quite a bit, pretty bad. But it got worse, definitely got worse. The Army opened the gates to legal. You know, I could go on base and get stuff. And when I was in Georgia, I got stationed in Georgia. The legal drinking age was 18. By the time I got there, I was 18, and it was game on, man. And so I'm an alcoholic, man. I was drinking alcoholically, and you couldn't tell me I was an alcoholic. I just drank. Sometimes I would just overdo it. I used to use that word, those words, overdo it. I just overdid it, you know. All the time I overdid it, man. And so I was a bad blackout, pass out, drunk before I was 18. And at 18, definitely. And from there on. So I was getting in all kinds of trouble. Lots of trouble. Alcohol and drug related in the Army. And I managed to figure out a way to get the hell out of there earlier than I was supposed to. Honorably. Because I worked for it, damn it. I got out as an honor graduate. And here I am freaking being threatened with Leavenworth and shit, you know. The marriage was shit. You know, it was a very untrusting marriage. Had a newborn, you know, going on. And I was very irresponsible and very alcoholic, you know. Things just weren't working out well. And so I got out and endured that marriage for about, for both of us. She endured it with me and I endured it with her. It just was not good. And so we just made it for until my 20th birthday, and it was split the sheets time. Once that happened, in spite of the health that really was to get out of that, it was also devastating for me, and it just opened up a whole nother bout of more drinking. And so then it went on. And that was in 82. My first drunk driving was in 81 up at Fort Ord. My second one was in 82 in Van Nuys. My third one was in 83 in Atascadero, Santa Margarita, actually. And then it was like, I mean, I was just getting it. I just couldn't get away with it, you know. I always thought, you know, that wasn't even the incomprehensible demoralization for me. That was just that I just got caught, you know, unlucky. I was just unlucky. The demoralizing things I'll get into a little later. But so that was drunk driving number three. And I have no clue how I didn't get in more trouble through the years, man. But somehow I stayed out of trouble because I was driving in blackouts regularly. Though I tried not to, that didn't matter. I was driving drunk a lot, and I got away with it all the way until 89. Now, they talk about geographics in the book. That's me. I ended up leaving here. I was all over up in Atascadero. It was Los Osos, Paso, all around that area. And I finally upped and bailed out to Texas for a job that ultimately fell through. So I'm in Texas. I'm going to change my life. I'm going to get there. I'm going to start working out. I'm going to not drink. I'm going to just get my shit together. I'm getting there. It's a housewarming. You know, it's celebration time. And it just never stopped. No matter where I went, it came right along with me, man. Changing places don't work, you know. So I wound up there. And after about seven and a half months, I wound up down in Louisiana. And there is ultimately where I wound up with the drunk driving number four. And that was in 89. So I went 6 years without getting cracked. I did get a drunk in public once in between that stuff. But other than that, no drunk drivings until 89. So in 89, I end up driving my truck off of a road. I'd gone out that night. I happened to have some money in my pocket for a change. And I actually went out looking for ecstasy, you know, and to drink and do X, you know. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but my story includes drugs, and that's my story. So I was out looking for X-Men. I love that drug. So I went out looking for it, and it wasn't happening. But Jaeger was on. I was drinking Jaeger in plastic cup. I told him, fuck that shot, man. I don't want the shot glass. Give me, fill me up a cup. So, and whatever the charge is, I don't care. So they were filling up those like frosted plastic cups, about 3/4 of the way full with Jaeger. And it was weird in Louisiana, man. They had like these 8-ounce cans of Budweiser. It's like, 8-ounce, what the fuck is this, you know? And so, I mean, so I was, of course, going through those like crazy. I'd get two at a time. But I ended up getting ripped that night. And I ripped. And there's no last call in Franklin, Louisiana. There didn't used to be. Not in 89, there wasn't. And so I drank all the way up until about 3 o'clock, and I was tanked. And I called some friends to get me a ride because I knew. I ended up all but downing the last Jaeger I had and chased it with a little bit of beer, and I knew that was going to hit me within 15 or 20 minutes, and I was already wasted. I called them up to get a ride, and it's a 45-minute drive from where they're at, and they're like, really? Because they said, anytime you know, I said, yeah, man, I just slammed this, that, done. Really? I'm like, you know what, man, I think I can get to New Iberia. Let me see if I can get to New Iberia, which is about probably 20 or 25 minutes from there. I think I can get to New Iberia and let's see how I'm doing from there. And I don't remember getting there. I don't remember shit. But I do. I don't remember getting in the accident. There's flashbacks of getting thrown all over the place, but I put my head through the windshield, turned the steering wheel into a horseshoe. My knee took out those pull brakes, took that, and, you know, just I got screwed up. So if there's any scars to be seen, I had 60-some stitches in between my forehead, going in my eye here. I'm coming to on and off, hurt. I mean, I'm in pain. As drunk as I was hurt. And blood's just dropping. And I was in the middle of the night, man. Pitch black. I was out in the middle of some sugarcane field somewhere, probably trying to sneak my way in the back way or something. I don't know. And luckily some dude came out of nowhere. I said, God help. I barely got that out. I was like, God help. And all of a sudden, you know, I know I passed out. I was in and out, you know. And all of a sudden this big old truck, tires about, you know, like huge tires. Guy pulls up, looked to me like there was a couple other people in the car with him. He jumps out of his truck, comes over, he goes, Jesus, are you all right? And I go, help me, you know. And so he goes, oh. So he took off, and next thing I know, I was in the hospital. And I don't remember any of the stuff in between other than when I was in the ambulance. But it was really bright. That kind of brought me up a little bit, woke me up a little bit, whatever. And I knew I screwed up. I was drunker than shit, and I knew I wrecked the truck, but I didn't know how bad. I saw it later. It wasn't good. And I just remember saying to one of the paramedics, I go, I really screwed up, didn't I? And he goes, yeah, you did. And it hit. But it didn't mean shit. You know, that was in 89. So I get back to California. I'm getting the fuck out of there. I'm geographing back to California. Same month I got back, I got another drunk driving. And that was the last drunk driving. So, and that was in January of 90, okay? My first day of sobriety, this trip in, was February 19th of 96. So you go six years, a little more than 6 years before I finally got in this time. It's probably closer to 5.5 years when I first started trying to get help here. So I wind up, and the drunk drivings were, I mean, granted, they were problems, pain in the ass. You got to deal with courts, the second DDP and all that bullshit, all that. But that was the least of my problems. My problems for me were the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization coming to in my urine almost on a regular basis, destroying relationships, losing girlfriends, losing friendships, destroying family. Exing my daughter out of my life, you know, just total destruction, losing jobs, moving and going and trying to get it, can never get it together. And just got that vicious cycle of sick and freaking tired, man, sick and tired of this shit. I got to do something, man. I got to do something. So I finally came into these rooms May 3rd of 95 was my first attempt. Now, I don't know if I got into these rooms on the 3rd, but I started seeking out Alcoholics Anonymous, somewhere close to that. That was my first day. That was my first sobriety date, May 3rd of 95. And so I'm seeking help. I'm coming to these meetings. I'm making a lot of meetings. I still had a job at that point, but I was still hitting. We used to have candlelight meetings at 10 o'clock on Friday and Saturday nights at the other group. We used to have lots of meetings. Lots of meetings were available. So I was hitting, even with a job, I was still hitting 2 to 3 meetings a day. And on weekends, I'd hit as many as 4, sometimes 5, while I still had that job. So I was hitting lots of meetings, trying to hear something, you know. I mean, I would hear some funny stuff on occasion, but I couldn't grasp anything. It's like, look, that's cool that you got all your problems and shit, but tell me what I do about my drinking. You know, I'm sitting here in these meetings, white-knuckling it. I'm doing what they're telling me to do. Keep coming back. We care. Keep coming back. And there were people that you could tell really meant that, you know, that you could see it. And there was people that really cared, and they were trying to help. But I just couldn't get it, man. And I made it to the 55th day. And my mind, never having in my life gone that long length of time without a drink, so, you know what, if I can go 55 days, I can drink once a week. I can drink once a week. So I figured Saturdays. Yeah. So I did. I drank once and made it to the 5th day. Of course, I got drunk. Made it to the 5th day, drank 2 days. Made it 3 days, got on a 3-day run. Sobered up for 1 day. And I'm going to meetings in between. This is newcomer again. Made it past my 30. I'm doing this again. And finally come to out in front of O'Sullivan's 3 days later. 3 days have disappeared. And I'm like, Jesus. I walk home, tore up, and I get to my house, and I call up my boss that morning, early in the morning, the next day, and ask him if he'd be willing to lay me off so I can, literally, I remember saying, so I can find me. And, what, did you drink again? Like, yeah. And he goes, we thought you did, you know. Because your behavior changes even if you're not drunk, man. Your behavior changes. Your attitude, everything changes, man. But I would go to work if I hadn't even been drinking. But they knew. They knew. And so, yeah. So he laid me off so I could get unemployment, at least while I'm trying to get my shit together. Arranged to go through detox. Got into detox probably 3 days sober or somewhere about, something like that. Went through the detox. And I was unemployed at this point. Barely getting by. My unemployment was hardly shit, but it was enough to go to the town center hotel and get a room. Actually, that time I didn't go there yet. Did I? Nope, I didn't go there yet. That's the next one. So, anyway, so I made it. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for almost 7 months. I really was in the saddle, so to speak. I really was doing this thing. I averaged over the course of almost 7 months, 3 meetings a day. Rarely would I hit 2 meetings in a day. Often I would hit anywhere from 3 to 5. So I was hitting a shitload of meetings. I was reading, I was praying, I was doing all these things. I was taking the steps, I thought. Got a head full of Alcoholics Anonymous, but nothing moved. Nothing moved for me. You know, I remember going through, and they talk about clear-cut directions being in our book. Literally clear-cut. There's clear-cut directions in this book. And when you don't understand what you're doing, I'm thinking that I'm doing this thing. Well, what I did is I went out on a country road in Pomo, dirt road out towards the foothills, and shared about 12 pages of my justified anger, all my resentments, whether it was against me and sure as shit against everybody else. All kinds of justifiable anger. My resentments. I shared those. That was my grudge list. But I didn't do an inventory. I thought that was an inventory. And so did my then sponsor. You know, do you get it? I mean, I got relief and I shared a couple of things that I was incredibly ashamed about, but I got them out anyways. And I did feel like, okay, there's a load taken off here, but I was still doing this, man. And it was probably a couple, 3 months, inside of 3 months easily, that I got to the point where it's like, how do you go almost 7 months without drinking, doing all this stuff, doing all this right, making lots of friends, shitloads of old timers, they loved you, they invited you in, they talked, you had doing all this stuff, and next thing you know, I'm freaking drunk again. I was in a 4-day blackout again, in detox again. Somehow they, I don't know why, probably because they knew me. They knew I was really doing this deal. I don't know what, but back then they let me in that. And my sponsor came and saved my life after 4 days of being blacked out. I was drinking myself to death. Came and got me out of there and they took me in. So that was after almost 5 days shy of 7 months. And that day was the last day I drank to this date. I went through hell. I know what DTs are. The delirium tremens, I know what they are. I know what it's like to detox, to say the least. I was freezing my ass off and soaked. And then I would be hotter than shit, not sweating. Shaking, in despair, confusion, scared, not knowing shit. I'm in bed, sick, very sick, just loaded, just alcohol poisoning to the max. Going through this shit, praying virtually nonstop. I couldn't sleep because I was just so screwed up. Couldn't sleep. And praying. The only time I didn't pray is when I got up to have some of that detox tea they had over there at the time. And to go to the bathroom and maybe eat something, a little something. I think I was eating one meal a day. For me, that was like not enough, but I was eating something. I was screwed up, but I was in the room just praying. And I was sincere when I said this one prayer. I said, Lord, I go, you know, because I'd almost lost all faith. You know, I've been praying and begging, even before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, just begging for help, asking for help, please, you know, and nothing. So here I'm praying, and I go, Lord, if you really are there, now would be a good time. You know? And I don't like the idea that I'm not trying to call the shots, but I really needed help, and it's like, and I remember asking in prayer, and this is my part of my, this is really what took place. We hear that we stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon in our readings all the time, in the meetings that have readings. That came into my mind, my thought. And I didn't put it there. And it kept repeating itself. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care. And I'm sitting there going through it, praying, and but I can't think of anything. That thought just kept coming through my head. It was literally to the point. Easily was going on for 45 minutes. Easily. It was starting to drive me crazy. It's like, Jesus, please remove this thought. Help me think of something else, you know? And it occurred to me then that, you know what? This keeps happening. It's being said that, you know, there's meaning in this. I was at the turning point of my life. And I knew that when it hit me, I'm getting goosebumps because it was a spiritual experience for me. I was at the turning point of my life. Either I was going to accept, literally, for in my case, Alcoholics Anonymous. They say spiritual help. Well, that's Alcoholics Anonymous is spiritual help. So I was either going to accept this program and try to roll with it, or go off the bitter end and just drink myself to death. It was going to be one or the other. And I knew that because I can't drink. I knew before reading it in the doctor's opinion that the only way for me to have any kind of hope or chance at life was to not drink. Complete and total abstinence. The doctor's opinion talks about that. I knew that before I read that. I knew it. I can't drink. And when the 2 month bout and the 7 month bout that I went through, going through this shit, I started romancing the drink probably 2.5-3 months before I ended up relapsing that last time. I couldn't imagine life without alcohol. I couldn't imagine without it. As devastating and as much trouble as it was for me, I could not imagine my life without alcohol. If I saw red and white, it was fucking Budweiser. And I'm thinking Budweiser. Now I'm out at the barbecue pit, and I'm not doing this, but this is in my mind. I picture myself at the barbecue pit with a coffee cup full of brandy, like I did, and a freaking a Budweiser, barbecuing, having a good old time. And I'm romancing that thought. Eventually got me. And my sponsor reached out to a gal named Gussie after my last relapse and said, you know, he's not getting it. And Gussie, I mean, he told me all this stuff after it all took place. He goes, he told her that he's not getting it, you know, blah, blah, blah. She goes, he still has an alcoholic mind. That woman knew the book like nobody I know. She knew the book. She knew the steps. He reached out. My sponsor was humble enough to reach out to her to help. And we sat at the old Alano Club during a noon meeting on a weekday, I don't remember which one, but in a small room back when it was on McClelland over there by the DMV. And we went through the steps in that sitting on two resentments. She walked me through the third step because I already had a faith. The thing is that I've come to find, I believed in God. I was a Christian. I was baptized. I believe in Christ, man. He is my Savior and my King. Yes, I believe that. But I have no works. They say faith without works is dead. I get it. That's where the steps come into play for me because they are the works. So I already knew I was powerless over alcohol. My life was absolutely unmanageable by me because I have no power. And I also realized that, you know what, there is a God. I know that. I didn't have to come to believe. I believed. So she put me right into the third. So we talked about that briefly. We went right into the third step. And they talk about that step being that this is the new and triumphant arch through which we pass through to freedom. Okay, so you go through that part of the book. I did. I went through that part of the book. And the keystone to the new and triumphant arch, arc. So we do the third step prayer. And before we did that, though, she goes, we're reading that part where it says we have a new director. He is the principal. We are his agents. And she asked me, what is an agent? What is an agent? And I go, a representative. To me, an agent's like a representative. And when she said, okay, so you're a representative of God then. And I go, what an order. I can't go through with it, man. But I mean, for real. I mean, I suppose this is a spiritual program. That's a big role to take on. But you know what? I don't have to do it perfect. We alcoholics, and we ain't perfect. Nobody is. But I mean, we alcoholics, I'm sure shit not. So I'm not perfect. But it's like, you know, that's supposed to be the ideal that I carry with me from here on. Is that we had a new director. I had a new director. He's the principal. I'm his agent. So, wow. You know, I'm a representative of God. That's a big role to play. I got to be nice. I got to be kind, loving, caring, selfless. Good luck with a self-centered guy like me. You know, so, but it took meaning to me. I understood more than I ever did before just on that. And when I shared out my gangs of resentments out on that road, I knew what they were. She had me write down two resentments. And out of those two resentments, they talked, taken, putting before us in black and white. Okay, so when you're, for those that may not understand this or know yet, there's a, in the inventory process, there's an illustration in the book. That's a grudge list. It's not an inventory. It's a grudge list. And that's all I shared was a grudge list. So I was still doing this. I was justified. I was full of self-pity and blame. A lot of blame. Well, if it wouldn't have been for this, or if it wouldn't have been... I was still carrying that shit before I drank again. See, I'm the type of person without being properly treated with this disease, I'm going to drink. That's my story. That's how it works for me. I need to get the fucking edge off. Eventually, I got to get the edge off eventually. So what's going to do this? So on those two resentments, we had one piece of paper. I think we wound up on the second side. I had four rows all the way down of stuff with check marks, a lot of check marks on about a dozen of them. Lots of them. The ones that are more glaring defects. Self-righteousness, pride, judgment, jealousy, envy, you know, all those things. And when I saw that for the first time in all these meetings, all this praying, all this stuff that I've been listening to, first time did I see finally what they mean in the book where it says, our alcohol was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. That right there are the causes and conditions. I drank to get that shit off. I didn't think that. I never in my life would have thought that. I drank because it made me feel better. Why? Because I was carrying all that shit. Because I was just full of so much stuff. You could have never told me that. That's the Alcoholics Anonymous way, man. It didn't just point it out. When I saw that, so you clearly see that you're sharing. Basically, you're doing your fifth step at that point. So you're talking about it. You're going through it. You're admitting. She tried to pull one thing out of me, which was adultery one time. And I said, no, I'm not an adulterer. She goes, well, you said you cheated on your wife, blah, blah, blah. And I go, I did one time, just once. You know. She goes, well, you're an adulterer. I hadn't put it down yet. She goes, you're an adulterer then. Put it down. I go, wait a minute. I only committed adultery one time, but I'm not an adulterer. She goes, if you committed adultery, you're an adulterer. Put it down. And she goes, if you can't. And I'm like, wait a minute. She goes, if you don't put it down, you ain't owning it. And if you don't own it, you ain't getting past it. And I'm like, it still took me about 2 minutes to finally put it down. Because I was like, this is bullshit. But I sat and I thought about it. So it's like, well, if I can't get past it, I'm going to at least put it down. Because I did commit adultery. I'll figure, you know, something out later, I guess, you know. So I put it down. And we went through them again. And I saw as a result of all the other ones, these are all characteristics of myself. These are, they talk about they touch on about probably five or seven different defects, shortcomings, how they've crept in and become a part of our life. All of that had crept in and become a part of my life. And so that was through five. And in step six, it says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. That was an easy one. I just envisioned what it would be like if all this shit was out. If all this was gone out of my life, man, I would fucking be floating on air, man. So that was not a hard one. So we went ahead and moved on to the seventh step. And we did the prayer. My creator, I'm not willing that you have all of me, good and bad. Good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Goosebumps again. This is real shit, man. This is my story. This is what took place. It was a real deal. That, for me, at that point, produced an entire psychic change. I had a new way by which I could live. Not perfect, but I had the tools now. But I still had more work. I still had to go home, start writing a list, which I did. And I started setting out on amends, the easier ones first. You know, so I did that, and I got into action, man. I was not playing around with this thing, and I was living 10 by the process I just did. Step 10, a lot of people say, I went home and I wrote inventory. I don't do that. Doesn't mean it's not right or wrong. I don't care. Whatever works for you is cool, but I don't do that. I was directed and shown that the 10th step is literally 3 through 9 in the now. In the now. So as things crop up, and it doesn't always happen now, sometimes it don't happen for weeks, sometimes even months. Sometimes I still carry shit around in sobriety until I finally go, okay, fuck, I'm done. I'm tired. You know, what's wrong with me? Okay, well, I'm carrying some shit. So I eventually I addressed it. But the thing is I have hope as long as I never pick up. And honestly, I haven't had a desire to drink since that third or fourth day in detox. It's been gone. Is that because of anything I did? Not a damn thing to do with me. Because if I could have had anything to do with it, I would have removed that shit long ago. It's in spite of myself, not because of me. No human power did it. There was no human power that did it. God. There's no other answer. It's God. I was touched and blessed with healing and a freedom of that obsession and that driving force that just dominated my mind because of a psychic change. The doctor's opinion talks about this. If you're newer, it's mentioned in the doctor's opinion. Very, 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 very cool. It's not even really a chapter. It's a doctor's. It's in the front part of the book before we even begin our 1 through 164. But it's very informative, and he really discusses this disease pretty in detail about the allergy. See, I react different than normal people, and I couldn't understand that shit. I just figured I'd drink because I'd like to feel better. I like the effect. You know? Well, there's a reason for that. Most people, normal people, they drink until they start to feel it, and they go, that's it. Which I do not understand. Have no understanding of that shit. It's just starting. Are you kidding? Really? It's just starting. You know? So, but they get to that point for an alcohol, but from this alcoholic anyways, as soon as I start to feel the effect, it's on. There's no stopping now. There's no shutoff valve. It's pass out or blackout, whichever's first. That's me. That's how I drink. I go insane. So, living the 10th step in the now as much as I can. Sometimes I have to wait 15 minutes till I get away from everything. First time, I think I had a spiritual experience in detox. I had a psychic change my 13th day in this trip in. And then I had a spiritual experience at about 6 months or so. I used to work at Ward. That was one of my first job. I couldn't get a job for shit in those after I lost that job. I went interviewing for jobs, all the stuff, jobs that I was well qualified for. I couldn't get a job. First job I walked into after getting a psychic change, I swear to God, I walked into the job, I walked into Ward's, met the manager, he sat down with me and he hired me on the spot. So there was a change already happening, you know, it's like, what? So 6 months into this job, this asshole from my work is screwing me out of commissions. And I found out about it. And it fumed me, to say the least. And I went back into behind the TVs, back when they used to have tube TVs and shit. Went back behind there and I prayed. I took a look at my part. I asked God, I did more or less a 7-step prayer. I asked God to help me and all that stuff. And so, because I went off on him and I went up to him and I did my amends and whatnot. Now this guy, I didn't like this guy. I didn't like him. He was already screwing me over for a lot of money and for quite a while apparently. And so I didn't care a whole hell of a lot for him, but I went up to him and I did this process that Alcoholics Anonymous told me to do. Against my own desires, believe me. But you know what? I do not want to risk my sobriety. I'm gonna do what they told me to do. So I went and I did the prayer thing. I looked at my part, I did the 7th step. I went out to set amends. I went out to the floor. I confronted him. I told him, hey, look, man, I want to apologize, blah, blah, blah. Yucky, yucky, yucky. This is my reaction. He goes, man, I'm sorry, too, and blah, blah, blah. And he freaking goes, give me a hug. And I hugged him, you know, kind of like this, but I hugged him. And that's, to me, when after that took place, I was blown away. I walked away going, holy shit. This really works. This worked. And that for me was my spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So yeah, I took the steps. I was doing my 11 step work. I had a lot of time prior to getting out of the Town Center Hotel. And even after that, for that matter. But I used to spend a good amount, far more time back then than I do now in my 11 step. So I was doing, you know, a lot of reading still absorbing and just really getting involved in really getting a lot of reading in the book and the 12 and 12. and certainly 11-step work. And 12 was just basically for me at that point was just, you know, coming to meetings and sharing whatever experience, strength, or hope I have, and certainly absorbing what I could for me. So I don't come to meetings for anybody. I come to meetings for me, really. I mean, I hope that I can say something to help someone that's new and struggling. And I hope God bless you, and I hope you keep coming back, and because you have a hope here. There's more than just meetings. It's not just getting to these frickin' meetings, hearing the same shit all the time, hearing the same readings all the time. It's a lot more than just that. I mean, it's awesome. The meetings are awesome. I love meetings. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, all of it. But there's more to it than just meetings. There's Big Book. There's sponsorship, whether you're sponsoring or somebody's sponsoring you. And there's the steps. And discussing the steps. Not just discussing them, but certainly taking them. And as a result of those steps, you know, it says in our readings that here are the steps we took. Talking about the steps, the 12 steps. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. That is the program of recovery, the 12 steps. It's not meetings. Because you can eventually, I mean, meetings are critical. I mean, I made shit tons of them. But not as many these days because I've come into Alcoholics Anonymous hoping to get kind of what I actually got, which is a life, you know. I never want to detach from this program. I love it. I love meetings. I love the people in it. I care for newcomers. I care for a lot of people here. I have a lot of my best, some of my best friends are here. Joe and I go off on trips together for freaking a week at a time and shit, you know. I mean, just I know so many guys. We played ball together, you know, Glenn and I, and just the list goes on and on and on. Just we create good friendships, you know, and meaningful ones, and hopefully lifetime ones. Yeah, and that clown is bald headed over there. What are you, about 65 now? Yeah. So, anyways, and I met my wife in these rooms. You know, she got long term sobriety too, and she 13 stepped my ass. I didn't 13 step. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, well, maybe I'm not, but anyways, yeah, so she's an absolute blessing and gift in my life, my wife, you know, and we've been together, married now for, hell, we were together just 2 weeks shy of 9 years before we tied the knot, and we've been married now for, what, 18? Is it 18? Coming up on 19 years. So, it was a wedding by invitation only out at Waller Park at the main spot, and we had lots of our friends. It was a big wedding. Big wedding, you know, just a beautiful day, and with people that mean the world to us, to be able to experience that to be able to experience them in our special day, and to be together, and what a neat thing. So, we are going to be going. You know, we both have kids that are grown up with their kids now, so we're grandparents, and we love them all deeply. We have those types of things happening. We also have losses and death that we experience. My nephew was 1 week short of being 21 years old, and he died from a methadone overdose. So we lost him. And his mom, my sister, we lost her about 5 years later to cancer. And then my dad, we lost in 2016. Christmas night, this bitch wanted to take his BiPAP mask off. That was ultimately what's keeping him alive. And we had talked to the doctor beforehand if we could keep that on him until he passes. And she said, absolutely. And this one nurse just wasn't being patient or something. I don't know. But still, anyways, Dad made it until the 26th at 5:34 in the morning in 2016. And we lost Dad. My mom's going to be 95 May. She's still doing well. She's healthy. She's doing good. And my wife lost her mom. It's been, what, 4 years now? About 4 years. So I mean, we go through a lot of pains, losses, and suffering, even in sobriety. And a lot of people say, well, it's just life. Life's hard sometimes, man. I can do it without alcohol. I don't need to drink. I'm a lot better off not drinking. Because then I don't get to experience that. I don't get to recover from it. I don't get to realize how blessed I am to have had these people in my life. Been able to just cross paths if it was just for 1 minute in this lifetime. The human experience is an absolute gift. It's by grace that we get to even be here. let alone, I'm not talking about sobriety, just the human experience. You know, I heard this in a meeting probably when I was about a year and a half, 2 years sober up in San Luis. A guy was sharing, and she, some book she was reading, she goes, blah, 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 yucky, yucky. And she said that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And I was like, that's cool. That's really cool. Because in my belief system, my belief that God literally knew us before we were in the womb. So that being the case, not if, but that being the case, is, am I not a spiritual being then? Because God is spirit. That's defined. God is spirit. So if God knew me before I was in the womb, then I'm a spiritual being too. I'm having a human experience. What a gift. And I was squeezing the guts out of it, taking it for granted, wasting it away, destroying it, hurting people along the way, doing all this shit. Not anymore. Goosebumps. My hair's standing up. You can see that shit. Look at that. Life's a gift, man. And I acknowledge that today. And I appreciate all the alcoholics that shared their stories before me. And the alcoholics that were here to welcome me in, look me in the eyes and say, we do care. Keep coming back. And that they would help me in any way that they could. Invite me over to their house. Give me meals. Do all kinds of shit. We get to experience life together. We don't go it alone in here. There's a lot of good people in these rooms. There's a lot of help in these rooms. So if you're suffering and you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you, it's just like in Dr. Bob's story, he says, if you really and truly want to, this is probably word for word, but if it's not, it's really close. If you really and truly want to quit drinking for good and all and realize you must have some help, we know we have an answer for you. We know we have an answer for you. So I hope that if you're new, you stick close. Stick around if you want to change your life. If you're sick and tired of that shit. I did, and it's just by grace that I'm still standing. You know? And this program's a gift. You don't want to miss it. You don't want to miss it. And it's a delight to our eyes, those of us who have been around for a while, to see someone new come in and get it. Because your life, your perspective, your hope, everything changes. And it's not for the worse, believe me. I can imagine life absolutely without alcohol. In fact, I can't even imagine it with it now. And I'm not saying that I won't drink again. I can't tell you that because I'm an alcoholic. Let me sit and rest on my laurels. It tells me, warns me that for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are careful not to rest on our laurels, for alcohol is a subtle foe. I cannot just wing it from here on. I got to keep a God consciousness. God gets all the credit for my sobriety. I got to keep a God consciousness. I need to stay focused on the mark. And I need to be able to offer my hand when I can, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help. I'm willing to do that if I can. You know, so they did it for me, and I'm going to try to do it for others. I mean, I've been doing it for a while now, and it's by the grace of God that I'm alive and surviving. I appreciate you guys sitting through it. Nobody falling asleep on me, I don't think. If you did, that's cool. Anyways, I'm grateful. Thank you, guys.